Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Times-Picayune restaurant critic Brett Anderson, editor of the new anthology Cornbread Nation 6, The Best of Southern Food Writing, and photographer Carrie McCafferty, whose gorgeous new book is New Orleans, New Elegance. Brett Anderson is the restaurant critic of the New Orleans Times-Picayune and the winner of two prestigious James Beard Awards for his writing. He's also just learned that he's received a very prestigious Nieman Fellowship to Harvard this fall. Today we'll be talking about a new anthology he's edited, Cornbread Nation 6, The Best of Southern Food Writing. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Susan, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you.
I love this book. It made me so hungry.
That's a good sign.
There's been this terrific explosion in food writing, you know, accompanying our national obsession with food. So how did you choose the pieces in this book? What kinds of things were you looking for?
Well, you know, when I started it, I wanted to not have any agenda. I just wanted to go out and find the best possible stories I could about food and eating in the South. But once you start to put one of these things together, you realize that it's not quite as easy as that. I could have put an entire book together of stories just about Texas barbecue. So saying that I went in without an agenda, the fact of the matter is my agenda was that I wanted the stories to represent the South as I have come to understand it as a sort of adopted Southerner. I've lived here 11 years, but I'm a Yankee by birth. So I wanted it to represent that South I've come to know geographically and ethnically and sort of temperamentally as well, and for it to have a variety of different types of writing, deep reported stories, essays.
And poetry, too.
And there's some poetry.
I love that.
And some photography.
Yes.
In fact.
Very nice photography by our mutual friend David Grunfeld of the Times-Picayune.
Yes.
So how did this responsibility fall to you?
Well, the Cornbread Nation, this is the sixth volume of a series that sprang from an organization called the Southern Foodways Alliance, which is associated with University of Mississippi's Center for the Study of Southern Culture. And that organization I've been involved in since moving to New Orleans, really. And it kind of came out of that. I'm a friend and colleague of the director of the SFA, John T. Edge. And so he had asked me to do it, and I said yes without hesitation, not knowing that editing is actually just as hard a work as writing, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad to know that now.
It's a hard lesson to learn. But there are many recipes in this book. This is a book for people who love to read and love to eat, of course.
Yeah, that's deliberate. I kind of figured that there are plenty of cookbooks out there, but I just didn't think that that was necessarily needed for this. And I feel that there's enough really good journalism and writing in general about food in the South out there that doesn't have to do with cooking. Although, you know, the cooking comes into the narrative of certain of these stories, of course. But I just didn't think it was necessary. I wanted to sort of streamline it.
Mm-hmm. And so many New Orleans writers, Louisiana writers are in this book. And it's such an impressive range of people. So tell us about some of those. You might maybe start with Jessica Harris.
Yes, Jessica Harris. I used an excerpt from a book she wrote about basically slavery and the food that slaves ate. And is one of, I think, the most powerful pieces in this book.
Absolutely.
I've always admired her work ever since I started writing about food. And in particular, when I moved to the South, she was one of the writers that people had told me that if you want to be responsible about being a writer about food in New Orleans and in the South, you really need to know what Jessica is up to. And so, you know, I was really psyched to be able to use her story.
She's the real deal. Absolutely. Yeah. And Sarah Rowan is in this too.
Yeah, Sarah Rowan's one of my best friends. But even if she wasn't, she would still be one of my favorite food writers. I really love her book that she wrote about New Orleans gumbo tales. And the piece in this is from Garden and Gun magazine, the Southern magazine, and it's about boudin. And I think it's a very well-reported and very elegantly written in a Sarah Rowan-y way. The story about sort of a really delicious but frankly kind of ugly food.
I know. I love the idea of plopping the paper bag down on the trunk of your car. You know? And then, too, you have some work by Times Picayune colleagues. Bob Marshall's wonderful piece.
Mm-hmm. Bob's piece was one of those that I wanted this book to be open to stories like that, and which I mean is that's not really a story about food. He's not a food writer, and, you know, he's a reporter and writes a lot about the environment and fishing and so forth. But it did have to do about sort of how the environment is changing the lives of the people who provide us with the food we love. And in this instance, it's, you know, the fishermen down in St. Bernard Parish. It's also, I think, something I'd like to point out is I was editing this and choosing these stories not long after the BP oil spill.
Right.
And so it's some of it reflects that. You know, there's maybe a little bit more environmental reporting in here than I might have otherwise thought to put in there had that event not happened. And Bob wouldn't have written that story if not for that event.
Right. But it's perfect. And then there's David Grunfeld's wonderful pictures of the Collins oyster family. Mm-hmm. And we all heard so much about their lives in Golden Meadow after the spill. And it's kind of wonderful to see their faces. I thought it was really nice.
Well, I'm glad. You know, I got to know that family as well. But I thought his photos were very evocative. And so I was glad we were able to get those in there.
Now, and it wouldn't be a Southern anthology without something about drinking, of course.
Well, yeah.
And Wayne Curtis tells the story of one of the legendary bartenders of New Orleans.
Yeah. You know, Wayne Curtis is someone I've gotten to know and whose writing I've gotten to know over the last couple of years since he sort of adopted New Orleans as a part-time home. And I just really admire the way that he approaches writing about both what ends up in the glass and the people who make our cocktails. Mm-hmm. And so I was super excited to have him in there. Wayne's piece is about Chris McMillian, who's an old school New Orleans bartender and just an old school bartender in general. And I use the term old school because the rise of sort of cocktails as a fashionable part of the culinary world is somewhat modern and has sprouted a culture of its own that's comprised largely of quite younger people who are doing really amazing things, opening bars and coming up with new cocktails of their own and learning how to make classic cocktails and so forth. And what I really like about Wayne's piece about Chris is he's always been like that. You know, there is, you know, so much about food as well as I think since I've gotten to know it and become sort of a professional food writer, new trends that you see really do often spring from the way things used to be and they just had lying dormant. Mm-hmm. And I think Chris is an example of that. I think he's a kind of bartender a lot of young, ambitious bartenders would like to be, and he just happens to have been doing it all along.
And if you want a perfect mint julep, he's the guy to see.
He is, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
So what do reading all these pieces do for your own writing?
There is something inspiring about reading people who write about the same subject as I do from all different parts of the country for all different types of media and are finding stories that I wish I found and got to write about.
It's always great to see people who are at the top of their game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Bud Trillin story about moscas is one of my favorite things ever.
Yeah, that was an amazing story.
It was.
I actually ate with him there one of his trips. He's a total hero. But I think that's an example of, you know, talk about inspiring. You know, he's been doing this a long time. And I thought that that story about moscas was as good as, you know, pretty much anything in his repertoire when it comes to food writing. You know, and he writes wonderfully about things besides food and restaurants, of course. But I thought that I was thrilled to be able to have that in there.
Now, one odd thing about your role as editor of this book is that you won't be promoting it locally. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm kind of promoting it now.
You are now.
I'm not doing book signings and stuff. You know, because of my role as a restaurant critic at the newspaper, I'm sort of duty bound to make some kind of effort to stay anonymous. I know that having been here 11 years, lots of people do know what I look like. And that's, I think, just bound to happen. I don't wear disguises, but I don't really want to give anyone any extra help. It just makes my life a little easier. But some of the contributors are going to be participating in a signing in Octavia Books, and there might be some other things like that locally.
So you won't meet Brett in person, but he'll be signing books in advance. You can meet the other contributors to Cornbread Nation 6, Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. We've been talking with Times-Picayune restaurant critic Brett Anderson about the new anthology, Cornbread Nation 6, The Best of Southern Food Writing. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
If you're lucky enough to have a mom who loves books, here are some ideas for Mother's Day. One of the most amazing books I've read this year is Alison Bechdel's Are You My Mother? Remember that adorable children's book of the same title by P.D. Eastman? Bechdel subtitles hers A Comic Drama, and it is certainly that. Don't dismiss this as a graphic memoir with charming illustrations, or you will be depriving yourself of its deep, deep pleasures. Creator of the comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For, Bechdel brings a ready wit and a searching spirit to this quest to understand her gifted, distant mother, who was unhappily married to a gay man and who stifled her own aspirations. What to make of a mother who stops kissing her daughter goodnight at age 7, and yet takes the time to write out her daughter's diary entries, or who asks her daughter to consider using a nom de plume because she's uncomfortable with her lesbianism. To think her way through this complicated emotional terrain, Bechdel turns to the work of psychoanalyst D.W. Winnicott and novelist Virginia Woolf. One particularly lovely double-page spread imagines the two passing each other on a London street. Drawing on her own dreams and love affairs and therapy sessions, Bechdel makes true art of her life, finally arriving at that place where she comes to a kind of peace. Are You My Mother is smart, funny, and very moving. Terry Tempest Williams writes with incredible beauty of the natural world. In When Women Were Birds, 54 Variations on Voice, she comes face to face with an incredible absence. When her mother dies, she bequeaths Williams her journals, shelf after shelf of beautifully bound volumes, making her daughter promise not to read them until she is gone. But when Terry Tempest Williams turns to them, all of them are blank. What is she to do with this gift, which is, of course, also a challenge? She begins to fill them in, thinking and investigating mothers and daughters, silence and voice, the power of women in the world and in the home, as well as the responsibility to speak out in the world. You might give this to mom with a beautiful blank book for inspiration. Moms come in all sorts, so if you have a mom who's, shall we say gently, prone to embarrassing you, who drops the occasional F-bomb, who has periodic bouts of bad behavior, yes, I'm talking to you, my children. There is one book for her, and it's Jenny Lawson's, who is no relation to the fabulous Jenny Lawson who produces this program. Let's pretend this never happened, a mostly true memoir. Any book that involves squirrels in significant numbers is fascinating to me, especially a magical talking squirrel named Stanley. Jenny grew up with a taxidermist's father, and who knows what a bathtub full of raccoons can do for a growing family in Wall, Texas. No wonder Lawson calls one chapter, My Childhood, David Copperfield Meets Guns and Ammo Magazine. And what is one of the great lessons Lawson wants to teach her daughter Haley? Here it is. Because you are defined not by life's imperfect moments, but by your reaction to them. Because there is joy in embracing, rather than running screaming from, the utter absurdity of life. Like Jenny Lawson, I hope that's one lesson I've given my children. Happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there. Carrie McCavity's first book, Obituary Cocktail, published in 1998, marked the beginning of her distinctive photographic exploration of the city of New Orleans. Armed with training in anthropology and a keen eye for beauty, she's turned her gaze on restaurants in Etouffee Mon Amour, the great restaurants of New Orleans, St. Joseph's Altars, and Mardi Gras. She's photographed the interiors for Brian Batt's Big Easy Style, and now she's published her own gorgeous design book, New Orleans, New Elegance, with an introduction by Julia Reed. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Susan.
It's such a pleasure to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about the title, New Orleans, New Elegance.
New Orleans style was really what I was thinking about, what New Orleans design is like today. This generation of designers being very different from what was going on 20 years ago, 50 years ago, pre-Katrina was quite different. So I was thinking about how much I was enjoying the new designers I was seeing, the new interiors I was seeing with kind of a bright new attitude, a lot less formal, a lot less heavy, lighter fabrics, more contemporary art. So I was thinking of that style as new New Orleans, because it's still very much New Orleans. It has a lot of the New Orleans flavor and all the real classic elements, but blended in a way that feels really new to me.
So tell us how you picked the interiors to photograph.
You know, I've been photographing houses for about 15 years for magazines and books and clients, designers, architects, artists. And so I've just gotten to know a lot of people in the design and architecture world. And everyone I brought up the idea to had these great, excited things to say about how things were changing and how they recognized the same trends and how much fun it is to combine contemporary with traditional, and how that was accelerated by Katrina, because people who lost generations of family antiques or a lot of their stuff, they didn't replace it all with the same stuff. They combined what they had left, fixed what was fixable, and then the interiors, I think, now are a lot brighter, less cluttered, cleaner. And I've always thought of good interiors as representing the whole of society with its elements and icons and attitude. And so I started thinking of this new interior design as part of the new attitude of New Orleans.
I love some of the motifs you see as central to the new elegance. Tell us about those.
Some of the things that I started seeing over the last few years, like I said, combining inherited pieces with really contemporary local art, lots and lots of local artists, and then updating older pieces with really contemporary fabrics.
Like an old footstool covered
right.
in an
Something
animal print.
Brand new and, you know, a fabric that wouldn't have existed 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different textures. It's obvious that that's what our culture is, combining all of that history with contemporary life, but it takes a lot of creative, artistic talent to take old pieces and new pieces and art and combine them in a way that's beautiful. But there are some really, really talented designers.
But collections are a really important part mm-hmm. of this book. You photograph a lot of really interesting collections.
Because that's a big thing in New Orleans. I don't know if it happens other places as strong as it is here. People collect things that mean something to them over mm-hmm. time or
very idiosyncratic mm-hmm. things. And you have this wonderful introduction in this book, too.
Julia Reed. I'm so excited about that. I was photographing her for a magazine a couple of years ago, and I told her about the idea. And at the time, the idea was kind of evolving as I wanted to talk to, and I ended up doing that in the book, a lot of the people who are famous for creating what we think of as New Orleans' iconic style, the designers and decorators and architects and artists and some individuals who just have the talent for it, and getting them to tell me in their own words, what is New Orleans style? What makes it different from everywhere else? And how has it changed in the recent generation? So she thought it was just a great idea and encouraged me to do it and gave me names of people who she thought might be interesting. So when I finished the book, I called her up and said, by the way,
since we've come this far together,
right. Since you liked this idea.
And she has this wonderful line in there. It's like, for the first 200 years of its history, New Orleans style was cutting edge, which is really great.
Funny.
When you think about it, you go, yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, well, we've been talking with Carrie McCafferty, whose beautiful new book is New Orleans, New Elegance. You can meet Carrie Thursday, May 10th at 5 p.m. at John Vicari's Gallery, RSVP at 899-7362. Or you could see her Tuesday, May 15th at Octavia Books at 6, and again May 26th from 1 to 3 at Garden District Bookshop. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Contributors to Cornbread Nation 6, The Best of Southern Food Writing, Sarah Rowan, Lola Sarah Eli, Wayne Curtis, David Grunfeld, and Bob Marshall, signed the book Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Patty Friedman signs her new novel, No Take Backs, Thursday, May 10th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Today's guest, Carrie McCafferty, signs New Orleans, New Elegance, Thursday, May 10th at 5 p.m. at John Vicari Designs, 1912 St. Charles Avenue. Please call 504-899-7632 to RSVP. Carrie signs again Tuesday, May 15th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. Dr. Dale Archer signs Better Than Normal, How What Makes You Different Can Make You Exceptional, Thursday, May 10th at 6:30 p.m. at Maple Street Bookshop in the New Orleans Healing Center. Jeremy Garcin signs New Orleans Sojourn, Thursday, May 10th at 6 p.m. at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Poets Laura Mattingly and Rob McLennan and fiction writer Stephen Brockwell read Thursday, May 10th at 8 p.m. at the Goldmine Saloon. That's part of 17 Poets Literary and Performance Series. The Octavia Book Science Fiction Book Club discusses The Vet's Daughter by Barbara Comans, Saturday, May 12th at 10:30 a.m. at Octavia Books. Leslie Crawford Costner signs her children's book, Goodnight, Acadiana, Saturday, May 12th at 11:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Peter J. Murray signs Moki Joe is Coming, Saturday, May 12th from 1 to 3 at Garden District Bookshop. The May meeting of the Dickens Fellowship takes place Saturday, May 12th from 2 to 4 at Metairie Park Country Day School's Bright Library. Dr. Sharon Weltman of LSU's Department of English will discuss the character of Fagin in both the novel and the musical Oliver. Her lecture is entitled, Can a Fellow Be a Villain All His Life? The Lovely Artist's Retreat, A Studio in the Woods, presents Forestival 2012 at A Studio in the Woods. That's at 13401 Patterson Road on the West Bank, Saturday, May 12th from 11 a.m. to 5. This event offers families a chance to experience Louisiana's wetlands with live music, food, artistic demonstrations, kids' activities, tours of the woods and the founder's home, and more. There will be a debut of a puppet opera, Vanities of the Poor, and a poetry reading by Molly Day and Benjamin Morris, by admission. Ann Butler signs Main Streets of Louisiana, Saturday, May 12th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Octavia Books. The Black Widow Salon, that's upstairs at Crescent City Books, continues Monday, May 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. with UNO professor, writer, Chin Music Press editor David Rutledge, speaking on creative nonfiction and the Lairs and Nabokov's novels. The event is hosted by Michael Allen Zell. And don't forget, the Symphony Book Fair is coming up. It takes place at the Delgado Student Life Center, that's on the City Park campus with the entrance at Navarre Avenue, on Thursday and Friday, May 17th through 18th, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., and on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Proceeds benefit the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. Call 861-2004 for further information. Major support for The Reading Life is provided by Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org or email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.